Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from Washington, D.C. It's the afternoon of Friday, the 5th of March, 2016. So in this past week, we've had Super Tuesday, and we're going to have Super Saturday tomorrow. That will be the day you hear this, the 6th of March. But in the meantime, what we can say is a tremendous historical event is happening. A tremendous shift in the entire political complexion of the world. And I think, fortunately for us, it is a generally positive one. It is the destruction of the Republican Party as a national party in the United States. It is the extinction, if you will, of the Republican Party as a political force overwhelmingly for evil. And naturally, in a country as important as the United States, with a party like the Republicans who have dominated at many levels of government in many states, state legislatures, in the House since 2010, in the Senate since 2014, and contending for the presidency with big money for Jeb Bush or some similar hack figure. This is a very dangerous party. It is the party that brought you, to only go back a little bit, the first Gulf War with Mad Dog Bush the Elder. It brought you then genocide in Iraq. It brought you the creation of the globalized world order under Bush the Elder and James Baker. Those were the Republicans. The first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, the problems with Russia effectively started under the time of Bush. In other words, the great friendship with Putin that then began to break up towards the end, and no real solution for this. It is a party of genocide. It is a party of union busting, of social barbarism inside the United States. It's a party that oppresses women. It's a party that oppresses sexual minorities, trying to deprive them of their rights under the 14th Amendment, working through states. So we're talking about the destruction of the Republican Party, the massive fratricide of the Republicans. They are wiping each other out. Everybody should be observing this and rejoicing. This is the point when we have two states of the union, right? One coming from Trump and one coming from Nikki Haley. When we have two Republican debates coming out of Iowa, right? The Trump veterans event with Santorum and Huckstery, Diabolorum, of course, as we call him. And then you've got the official one across town. This is a time of splitting. You have to remember General de Gaulle of France, right? He would always say, I like Germany so much, I want there to be two of them. It is the most elementary calculation that anybody could make. If you divide your enemies into two parts and you get one part fighting the other, then you're on your way to success and victory. So what has happened now? Obviously, in the past week in particular, with the build up to this Super Tuesday, we see the Republican Party tearing itself to pieces. And speaking as somebody who has been trying to promote the extinction of the Republican Party as a national force, I've been doing this for years, for decades, certainly going back to my biography of Mad Dog Bush the Elder, that is George H.W. Bush, the unauthorized biography, but then continuing during the Iraq War, right, fighting against Bush the Younger and so forth, fighting also against the libertarian wing of these fakers, right, the Rand Paul, Ron Paul faker wing. It's very interesting. The people who followed those guys claim to be interested in the Constitution and liberty, and they've now thrown in their lot with the biggest dictator, the biggest strongman, the biggest oppressor, Trump, the biggest fascist, Trump. So you go from libertarianism, anti-authoritarian, to dictatorship. What kind of a doctrine does that to you? Well, Austrian school libertarianism does it. just in the same way that it takes your economy, destroys it, and then makes fascism much more likely. So we've seen the fratricide, the self-destruction of the Republican Party. We want to go through each exquisite detail because each of those has to be savored. Here's the point. We are not supporting a candidate. That is not the idea. I've told you again and again, the candidates are of very little interest, except to the degree that this or that candidate allows you to influence the general process of how the system is breaking up. And of course, the most interesting is Trump, because he's the most obvious fascist. He's the most outspoken, self-declared, self-indicted, self-convicted fascist, racist, bigot of the lot. And he's bringing about the split. In other words, it's hard. I found it impossible, quite frankly, myself, to try to promote the extinction of the Republican Party from the outside. So now what is going on, and this is often the case with social institutions, it is not a first, that the Republican Party is destroying itself. A kind of hysteria, a kind of, again, self-phagocytation, eating oneself, right? Having a feast by eating your leg. That's what has overtaken the Republican Party. So this is nemesis. This is what happens when you systematically violate natural law. These are the furies, what the Greeks would have seen here. A large institution is going down. And, of course, it's more than 150 years old, right? It goes back to John C. Fremont running for president for the Republican Party and the Free Soil Party in 1856. And it had a buildup before that. And for the first 30 or 40 years, or at least for the first 10 or so years, the Republican Party was actually a revolutionary party. It was the most revolutionary party on the world stage. It brought about the destruction of slavery, and it brought about, to some extent, the weakening of the Southern oligarchy. That is, from then on, the Southern oligarchy was not able to control the central government in Washington. Right? Up until 1860, the Confederates, the proto-Confederates called the shots. The Southern slaveholders, the slave power conspiracy ran the U.S. government. But after that, they couldn't. Until, of course, Richard Nixon came along, right, and made that possible again. Right? So that was a big step backward. Now, the goal is to destroy a party, to destroy a system. The system is this party system that we see. We'll go through a kind of a summary of the party systems in a couple of minutes on the show. We are not interested in promoting a candidate. We have said, the only thing we've ever said about voting is hold your nose and vote for Bernie Sanders. But we have hastened to add, this is not because Bernie or anybody else on the scene is actually qualified for the presidency. We're simply saying, we want to keep the process open on the Democratic side. We want the debates, the discussions, the elections, right? We want the political mobilization of the Democrats to go forward looking towards the convention in July, because we see that Hillary wants to shut it all down. Hillary wants to cut off debate. And since we're the enemies of Hillary as much as anybody else, we want to prevent her from doing that. So in the Democratic Party, our great enemy is, of course, Hillary Clinton, because she's got to be prevented from wrapping up the nomination, putting away poor Bernie Sanders. In other words, what we're trying to do is essentially we're trying to block the pre-programmed path of Bernie Sanders, which is to capitulate. In other words, to all those people who are going to leave the Democratic Party, he gathers them together. And then when he drops out, he delivers them into the hands of Hillary Clinton. We're trying to prevent that, but in the interest of another party split a little bit further down the road, Democratic. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So we are here between Super Tuesday and Super Saturday, and we are celebrating and documenting the many signs of the breakup, the smashing, the splitting, the splintering of the racist, reactionary, warmongering Republican Party of the United States. It is a barrier, an insuperable barrier to national progress, and it is a threat to the peace of the world. So that's the Republican Party. We don't need it. We need it to disappear. Now, we're going to mainly talk about the Republican Party here. We got a word about the Democrats. You already can see the fault line of how the Democrats will split. In other words, the only thing that keeps the Democrats together in this situation, the party of Hillary and the party of people who have gotten scooped up by Bernie, even though he's not a leader, but simply by default, you can see that fault line. It's basically going to be the Wall Street people against the progressives, the populists, the New Deal, the pro-labor, whatever you want to call them. Left-wing economic populists is probably a good way to describe them. Bernie, of course, not a leader, simply, again, there by default. This stuff has fallen into his lap more or less because nobody else took it, right? Elizabeth Warren could have done it up to a point. She would have been like Bernie. She would have been essentially a sheepdog or gatekeeper or so forth. But you could also see in the course of Bernie's speech on Tuesday evening, after the Super Tuesday primaries, you could see the spirit of capitulation and defeatism, the tired, resigned, repetitive essence of Bernie's campaign. And even I think the New York Times or some prominent news organ pointed out how tired and how close to capitulation Bernie seemed. The headline of that article was that the beginning of Bernie Sanders' concession speech? Well, I urge you people out there who are interested in Bernie or just, you know, interested in human progress, if you find yourself in the Democratic Party, you've got to keep holding your nose and you got to keep voting for Bernie. You got to force him to stay in the fray. You got to keep him alive and keep pushing him, right? Think of him as El Cid in the famous Spanish story, right? The guy can be basically no longer in this world, but you can still use him as a figurehead to push forward. So that's a way to do it. We want an open convention. We want an open convention on both sides. We don't want the machine bosses and the smoke-filled rooms to make these decisions. And on the Democratic side, that means you've got to get beyond the first ballot. In other words, you've got to somehow deny Hillary Clinton the nomination on the first ballot. Now, that looks pretty grim, but if she's indicted, right, and the subpoena is now coming her way, the guy who installed her special email server for, you know, putting state secrets up for grabs in a hostile world, all of that. So she's getting hit on the Clinton Foundation conflict of interest taking money, and she's getting hit on the server side, right? Notice that Bernie contributes nothing to any of this, right? Bernie would be embarrassed. He doesn't want to say anything. He won't talk, right? He won't push it. He doesn't say anything about the Goldman Sachs transcripts of the speeches. But nevertheless, if Hillary gets, indicted, more subpoenas and so forth, some people might stand up at this convention and say, look, we cannot vote for this woman because she's going to be indicted or jailed further down the road. And that will mean, if it happens in the midst of the campaign, right, in September, October, then the Democratic cause will become very tenuous, maybe hopeless. Now, Bernie, one very astute observer of these things, pointed out, would Bernie accept the Democratic nomination if he won it? Because there is this moment, right, when you give your acceptance speech, you got to stand up there and say, I am honored to accept your nomination as the Democratic candidate for the presidency. Would Bernie do that? Or maybe he'd say, I'm just, you know, I was only here to try to reform campaign finance and show you a new model. Right? He talks about his own campaign. The reason black people and other, you know, poor people don't vote for Bernie the way they're supposed to, according to some, is that he's interested in process reforms. His main emphasis is not what he's going to do for you. He talks about free college, okay, but how about, you know, a job program, the main thing, right? Bernie, Where's your program for 30 million jobs? He claims that he's got a program for 13 million jobs. He very seldom talks about things. The main thing he talks about that you know from Bernie is that the average contribution to Bernie's campaign is $27. I'm sorry, this is useless. This won't help anybody. You can take this and throw it out the window. And then, as he says in his capitulation speech this past Tuesday, he says, this campaign is about much more than running for president, much more than winning the presidency. That's ridiculous. The purpose of a political campaign is to take power, seizing power, the exercise of power. The pursuit of power is the goal of politics, not changing the national conversation. And with that, the national conversation, we're back to Occupy. And some of those people who were saying to foreign audiences in 2012, we changed the national conversation. You're wasting your time. It's pathetic. The U.S. national conversation goes from Honey Boo Boo to Madonna to Lady Gaga to Beyonce to the Stanley Cup and the Super Bowl and the World Series. And it does that by itself. And you don't have to do any of that. It's just a normal succession of these idiotic, inane, banal, and corrupting themes. So Bernie has now lapsed into that. He's basically saying, I forced Hillary Clinton to the left. Well, guess what? She will regard that stuff as campaign rhetoric. Remember, Obama ran as an enemy of free trade. He ran as a protectionist, basically. But he also sent Austin the Ghoul Goolsby of Skull and Bones to the Canadian consulate to say, look, this is just campaign rhetoric, right? Don't worry. NAFTA is safe. The giant sucking sound will continue. So the Tax Wall Street Party would like Bernie to say, would he accept the nomination? Because he sure didn't do anything about vote fraud in Iowa. He sure didn't do anything about the Goldman Sachs speeches. He will not talk about her emails, right? So this is capitulation up and down the line. So let's leave him there. The other fault line is Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, who has quit the Democratic National Committee of Debbie Wasserman Schultz because she wants to support Bernie. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz of the clothing budget. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has also just intervened to try to help the payday loan usurers, right? The ripoff artists who make these usurious, exorbitant interest rate loans to poor dupes and poor desperados and the general wreckage of this economy. So Debbie wants to make it harder for states or harder for the federal government, harder for anybody to regulate payday loans. And of course, payday loans should be illegal in the sense that there should be a usury law. And it used to be 10%, right, in most states. And that went up until the time of Paul Adolf Volcker, who was brought in by Carter, kept by Reagan, and then brought back by Obama. So he's a bipartisan figure. So this Tulsi Gabbard had been the vice chair, right? The deputy secretary, in other terms, right, European terms, the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, Tulsi Gabbard, now says she wants to quit and is quitting, has quit the Democratic National Committee, because in that position she has to be neutral. She doesn't want to be neutral. She wants to be in favor of Bernie Sanders. So there you go. So that's the fault line. In other words, this is exactly what would happen in the case of a split. Now, let's look at a few things. Let's talk about game theory as taught by the Tavistock Institute in London, right? One of the great brainwashing centers of the world, and also by British Brigadier General Frank Kitson, what he did with and against the Mau Mau in Kenya, and what are the ramifications. This was the gang and the counter gang. Now, here's the problem. Because of the popularity of spectator sports, right, the Super Bowl and the long season in baseball and, you know, March Madness, it's going to be on us, right? The general tendency in this culture is when you see a contention, a game, in effect, you're supposed to pick one side and root for the one side and be a fan. Now, this was already a degradation of intelligence. So we are here to tell you, the Tax Wall Street Party and yours truly, we want to tell you, when you see two parties contending, fighting, whatever it is, you must resist the stupid, abject, slave-inculcated tendency to pick one side against the other. Now, why not take a step back, analyze the entire game, and then kick over the game board. Kick over the game board. Don't take sides. Put the whole game through the ringer and shut it down. So when you see a gang and a counter gang, the ruling class, right, the enemy, the financiers, the oligarchs, they want you to see a gang and a counter gang, and then you're supposed to say, well, I'm going to support the gang, or, no, I'm going to support the counter gang. So the gang, of course, is the traditional leadership of the Republican Party, the Republican National Committee, the Koch brothers with their finances, and then, of course, the candidates, people like Bob Dole and John McCain, and the Mormon leader Mitt Romney, who has now been heard from this week. We'll try to give you a quick summary of what he had to say. That's one gang. Now, the other counter gang is Trump, with the open language of dictatorship. Open. Strongman. Man on horseback. Mussolini. He practically endorsed Mussolini this week. Now, there's some contention about whether Mussolini said this stuff about better to live one day as a lion than 100 years as a sheep. However, I don't think we're ever going to find proof that Mussolini never said that under any circumstances. Maybe somebody out there has the complete works and complete speeches above all, and the table talk, and the private diplomatic talk and whatever else of Mussolini. You would have to really go some to prove that Mussolini never said that. Anyway, we didn't hear Trump coming out condemning Mussolini. Obviously, his attitude would be, he's a great leader like Trump, right? Mussolini and Trump in the same class. So along with Trump comes what? Along with Trump comes that group of crazed petty bourgeois, and I'm sticking with that. The people who were for Ross Perot a quarter century ago are the ones who are for that. Those groups, those social classes, are the ones that support Trump today. I don't see that as blue collar. No, I see that as petty bourgeois, the stockbroker, the insurance broker, and like Trump, the real estate broker. So people like Trump, they're attached, right? They're sort of parasites, barnacles on the hull of finance capital and the top level financier oligarchy whom they admire, whom they wish to join, whose values they respect. But in addition, we've also got the gutter snipes, right? You saw this week, Trump was challenged 3 times by old Jake Tapper to repudiate David Duke, a racist Ku Klux Klan, neo-Confederate, right? The scum of the earth. And Trump wouldn't repudiate the white supremacist, the racist. And again, if you care about Lincoln and the Union, that used to be the big issue in the Republican Party, right? Then this is an absolutely revolting development. Anti-American, anti-national, pro-Confederate. There's nothing worse. Treason and slavery. rolled in a ball. So here we have the Washington Post. Trump does not affiliate with the white supremacists who make robocalls on his behalf, but he's got them in his corner, right? The American Freedom Party, they have a nominal candidate, but their main bumper sticker is Stop White Genocide. Can you believe this? They love Trump, right? This is a kind of a flanking operation, a wingman, as we've described it for some other candidates in the past. And others call Trump, quote, the great white hope. So, of course, the KKK in Trump's corner, the Knights Party, the Knights with a K, skinheads, neo-Nazis, the Daily Stormer, Stormfront, KKK Grand Wizard, David Duke. Okay, so that's what you're getting with Trump, whether you like. You want to mix your vote with the votes of those characters? Don't do it. So, gang, Republican establishment, right? Guilty of genocide in Iraq, right? Austerity ghouls, of course. And then Trump with fascists, white supremacists, Ku Klux Klansmen, subversives, all the rest of this stuff. So, how should you react to this spectacle, right? Should you join one or the other? No, you should not join any, either of those two. And on the Democratic side, you're not going to join Hillary. What you're going to do is try to keep Bernie going until you can get to a convention. And then you've got to get through the first ballot. And after that, on the second ballot, other candidates might come in. You can do something better. You can get a better deal. And, of course, it does depend on Hillary being indicted, which we hope will happen. But that's the situation. Let's be great realists and come back in a second. Welcome back to the World Crisis Radio. Webster Talking here in Washington, D.C. It's the 5th of March, right between Super Tuesday and Super Saturday. So if you have a chance to vote, stop Trump, never Trump, any way you want it. And on the Democratic side, you got to hold your nose and vote for Bernie. You got to keep Bernie alive. Keep hope alive. Because that's the only way to have an open convention. Bernie has got to get enough votes. He's got to be credible enough so that if Hillary gets indicted, which we cannot control, that can be a way out of the Hillary problem. Right? Hillary would become a bigger target of propaganda, obviously, once she gets, if she does get the nomination, then you're going to have to lift and shift over to her. But we can't make these kinds of predictions because the situation is totally in flux. What you're seeing is this is a once-in-a-lifetime spectacle to see the Republican Party tear itself into fragments, at least two pieces. Let's actually, we'll talk a little bit about, just maybe one or two other important things to bear in mind, right? The Kitson strategy is if you want to dominate a political space, you set up a gang that you control and you create a counter gang that you control. You control both. And therefore, if you only set up one, then there'll be an opposition and maybe you won't control that opposition. So this is the thinking. This is Tavistock. This again is General Frank Kitson of the British colonialists in Kenya. So, you must resist the tendency to choose. What you've got to see is that the gang and the counter gang are part of a system and that you've got to avoid it, right? The Italians call this il gioco delle parti. In other words, this idea that a staged or artificial opposition is really it's fakery and it's designed to prevent any real change from happening. So again, kick over the game board. Reject the entire thing. Focus on destroying the system. Focus on destroying the Republican Party and then the entire party system rather than focusing on any candidate. Although you must focus on Trump to the extent that he is the most extreme manifestation of what's going on. And, of course, if Trump became president, the United States would dissolve into chaos. Civil war is not too strong a term to use. What would happen if Trump seized power? We'll talk about some of that stuff. You would have a rebellion in the military, and you would have a rebellion in certain geographical areas, I would say. So we'll have to look at this as it goes along. Don't choose the gang. Don't choose the counter gang. Kick over the game board. Now, some other aspects of this. Divide and conquer. Divide and rule. This is the essence of what we would like to see happen. In other words, what is our role, right? The Republicans are destroying themselves. What we can do with limited forces is to catalyze this, to make it go faster by making the process self-conscious to a lot of the people who are involved. In other words, a significant force of people in the society have to be aware that this is what's happening. In other words, that it's a golden opportunity. It's not time to join this candidate or that candidate. It's time to promote the simultaneous downfall of all the figures of the old regime. Their simultaneous downfall and ruin and extinction is our goal. The extinction of a political party. So divide and conquer. Now, there are other terms that are used for this, right? In good old American, it's let's you and him fight. If you're facing two enemies, you try to play one against the other and then watch them destroy themselves. But you obviously you're promoting it, right? You're trying to get it so it'll happen. In the terminology of the German sociologist Georg Simmel, S-I-M-M-E-L, he calls this the Tertius Gaudens. They're Tertius Gaudens. And I think in German he says der lachende Dritte. The third party who's laughing while the other two are fighting. In this case, the third party who's laughing is humanity, right? We're getting some surcease. We're getting a break here for once. We're seeing the main plug uglies destroying each other, right? The Republican establishment with the Koch brothers and the rest of these people, oppressors, enemies of the people, and then the fascist demagogue, bully, and thug, Donald Trump, and his retinue of stooges, right, including the libertarians who have, these libertarians have thrown over everything they ever fought for. All that stuff about limited government, it's all a fraud. It was all union busting. That's all they ever cared about. It was all to serve the super rich and the billionaires. That's all the libertarians ever were. Their ideas are worthless. Their doctrines are just, you know, in the dung heap of history, not even the wastebasket, right? They're in the garbage can of history. So what else do we have? In German, this is sometimes translated as the rejoicing third. In other words, the third guy who's rejoicing as the two enemies destroy each other. This is also, you can think of it as the tactic used by Cardinal Richelieu in the 30 Years' War, right? That the Austrians and the Protestants, the Swedes and so forth, that they would fight each other to the point where then the French could come in and conquer all the contending parties. So think of somebody like Richelieu, right? Think of a statesman capable of thinking. You look at this situation, you're not going to support Trump. He'd become a fascist. You're certainly not going to support the Koch brothers and the Republican National Committee. So what you've got to do is to promote the extinction, the disappearance of all of that. I guess some people just can't understand, right? They think, they say, oh, well, if you're attacking Trump, that means you're for Romney. Or if you're attacking Romney, then you must be for Trump. No, we attack all of them. We wish to be rid of them. We wish to hurry them fast to their political doom. So now let's also think the benefits to the world from the extinction of the Republican Party. This is a really important thing. I do a weekly summary here from the United States for the Italian television service Pandora TV. And it's associated with our good friend Giulietto Chiesa, who is somebody who's got a glorious history in Italian journalism and left-wing politics, and he's also a cordially pro-Russian figure on the Italian scene, anti-NATO, and a very good friend. So I try to sum up what's happening, and my word this week is good news from America. For the first time in a long time, rejoice that the monsters, the plug uglies, the oppressors, the genocidalists of the Republican Party are getting weaker because they're wiping each other out. This is the idea. Now, what does that look like? If you remove the Republican Party from the world, you have removed a very significant cancerous mass of tumors and suppuration that have been afflicting the world for quite a while. I went through it, right? First Gulf War, Second Gulf War, all that genocide, globalization, all this stuff. The Republicans. So if the Republican Party disappears, you push the world political axis to the left significantly. How many degrees? I don't know. 5 degrees, 10 degrees, 15 degrees. It's a very big deal. The United States is, of course, a very big deal. And the possibly dominant Republican Party is a very big deal. So if you can take that out of the entire algorithm, then what you get is a world which is more friendly to civilization, less barbarous, more progressive, less tormented by wars and depressions. And generally speaking, you've done something good for the whole of humanity. And we intend to do it. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting here from Washington, D.C. Now, we need to talk about how the Republican Party is actually splitting apart. And the idea is, what's the end product, right? What's the end stage? What's the terminus ad quem, where this whole thing is headed? Here would be my idea. The Republican Party is now likely to split into the two component parts that you more or less see. On the one hand, you would have a Trumpian Republican Party, maybe with Trump, but I would think if Trump doesn't get the presidency, he's going to be bored, drop out, and go back to his sybaritic, hedonistic lifestyle, right? His corruption in the penthouses of Manhattan. So one would be the Trumpian one. So this would be racist, xenophobic, reactionary. It would be a warmonger party, because Trump is, right? Remember this past week, Trump said he wants the no-fly zone over Syria. Think what that means. Maybe he's too stupid to know this, right, or too ill-informed. But to call for the no-fly zone over Syria, and I'm amazed. I see people who claim to be great supporters of Syria, and they're out there for Trump. Well, hell, you're supporting the no-fly zone. You're supporting the military attack on Syria, because that's what Trump stands for. And Putin was very badly informed on this, right? I don't know who told him this, right? Maybe Steven Seagal or somebody like this. Trump wants the no-fly zone. That means he wants to try to suppress the Syrian Air Force. That means he'd enter into conflict with the Russian Air Force. And voila, World War III, thanks to stupid loudmouth Trump. So one party would be the Trumpian one. Racist, reactionary, warmonger, bigoted. It would be based on the ideas of Sam Francis, right? The theoretician for Pat Buchanan. This would be the middle Americans, except there would be no Americans at all in there. There'd be a bunch of racists, Ku Klux Klan, and the rest of it. There's also this guy, Roger Stone, who now emerges as an ideologue for Trump. So where would you find the Trumpian, racist, reactionary, bigoted Republican Party? Well, of course, in the South. It would be a regional party in the deep South, right? Alabama, Mississippi, stuff like this. It would be, as I've said many times, it would be in the Intermountain West. It would be in the rural areas all over. And they could even have some support in Western Maryland or upstate New York or places like this. What else can we say about this group? This would be Republican Party one, so to speak, right? Number one. And who would support them, right? They would get the, they would appeal to people in the backwaters, backward people, socially backward, people undergoing status panic, people concerned about foreign competition, miscegenation, all of this stuff. They would get the KKK vote, the racists, the bigots, and all the rest of this stuff. So that would be one Republican Party. The other one would be, quite possibly, a liberal Republican Party. In other words, it would, what you'd be doing is you'd be taking the social bigot, social reactionary part of the Republican Party. You'd be pulling that out. And then you'd be pulling out the warmonger neocon group, which would also go together with the Wall Street plutocratic group. So you'd essentially be cutting. It's like a breakup, right? Breaking up a company and then selling the pieces. That would be what the Republicans would undergo. So the second one would be, I think, an openly Wall Street, or more or less openly Wall Street and neocon party. So the legions of greed and the warmongers would be together, and the social reactionaries would be in the other one, the Sam Francis Trumpian one. So the liberal Republicans might do well. They might make a certain comeback in New England. I don't even know, though, because a lot of this stuff, you know, maybe Rhode Island. It's very hard to see where they would get anywhere. Maybe in Delaware. Maybe in the Pacific Northwest. The main point of this is that out of the Republican Party of today, you're probably going to get at least two pieces. And I think this is at least a plausible basis for observation and research, what I've just said. A racist reactionary one, that's the southern, western, rural one. And then you'd have this other one, which would be a liberal Wall Street Republican sort of thing, right? The Bull Moose Party. And that would, the Wall Street one would obviously have very little mass appeal, but they'd have some money, so they could get along with that. Now, let's just see what some people have said. I think it's the Washington Post that speculates one Republican Party 1 and Republican Party 2, although they don't say much about it. Here we go. Heather Cox Richardson, and this is in the New York Times. Heather Cox, you can find this, by the way, in the daily briefing that you should subscribe to, right? Go immediately to toplee.net. And subscribe for free to a daily briefing, which is going to come into your inbox in the middle of the night, right? Generally between midnight, 1, 2 a.m. at the latest. Out it goes to the world, and that stuff is up to date, right? Au jour le jour, same day news cycle, right? In the midst of the news cycle. So Heather Cox Richardson, a Boston College professor and the author of A New History of the Republican Party, predicts a violent rupture that cleaves the party in two. And here we would get, first of all, I'm quoting her now, a hardline conservative part, hardline conservatism, as embodied by Pat Buchanan, Newt Gingrich, and Mr. Trump. Now, I think this charming lady, this distinguished Professor Richardson, I think the categories are all mixed up. First of all, this would not be conservatism. This would be reactionary, proto-fascist, fascist, racist, right-wing extremism, right-wing radicalism, but not conservatism, unless you're talking about the conservatism of the Confederate States of America, which, again, would point, I think, in the right direction. So Pat Buchanan, right, the middle American, the bigot, right? This is somebody who's, you know, he's got the story of the Irish in America in his head, and he somehow wants to inflict all of those abuses that were visited on the Irish. He wants to visit those on others. Notice also Pat Buchanan, Confederate. He talks about his ancestors in the time of the Civil War supporting the slavocrat, slaveholding, treasonous Confederacy. Yeah, that's Pat Buchanan. Newt Gingrich, I don't know where she gets Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is pretty much a liberal Republican when you get right down to it, right? So his revolution, right? Newt Gingrich is revolutionary. This is a joke. And Trump, okay? So that would be number one. And then an old-fashioned, the second party, according to Professor Richardson of Boston College, a second party, which would be an old-fashioned strain of moderate Republicanism, I would say liberal Republicanism, pro-banker Republicanism, which recalls Theodore Roosevelt, a creature of the House of Morgan, as we know, Dwight Eisenhower, the chairman of the board, as they called him, right? He wouldn't restrain Patton. He wouldn't restrain Montgomery. He tried to balance all this. And if there, you know, if a little bit more gasoline for the German forces at the Battle of the Bulge, then Eisenhower's military record. Gotcha. And Nelson Rockefeller, and that gets it all the way. And she says, it's going to be really ugly. Yes, Professor Richardson, it's going to be very ugly. That's admitted on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. Now, we have developed what I think is a reasonable perspective. Republican Party fragment, shard, number one. Racist, reactionary, bigoted, Sam Francis, Roger Stone, South, Intermountain West, rural. This will be the party of Cloven Bundy, I would say. Again, some odd places, you know, the Piedmont, right? Western Maryland, upstate New York, right? The Piedmont of, I don't know what, South Carolina, stuff like this. And then the open, again, the party of Theodore Roosevelt, Bull Moose, House of Morgan, and Nelson Rockefeller, House of Rockefeller. That would be then the sort of genteel, upscale, country club Republicans. The problem with this is, for the Republicans, you can put the racist reactionary Republican Party number one together with the liberal Republican Wall Street financier party number two. And that's going to be much, much less than what you see the Republican Party as today. These two parties, no matter what they do, will never elect a president, not alone and not joining together. And it's going to be almost impossible for them to join together, because what you're seeing is the fact that they fight. The crazed, petty bourgeois racists who want to scapegoat Mexicans for all their problems. And on the other side, the Wall Street guys who say, look, we don't care about ideology. We don't care about abortion, gun rights, or anything of the kind. What we care about is money, money, money. We want union busting. We want tax advantages. We want government patronage. We want government contracts. We want cost plus contracts. We want to feed at the public trough. And therefore they fight. So that then leaves the Democratic Party far less under siege than it might seem to be today. And I submit that at that point, the Democratic Party is going to start falling into two groups. People will say, how can we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the friend of the payday loan usurers, running this party when we're supposed to be helping the middle class and working people and protecting people from the plug uglies of Wall Street? Okay, you get the idea. So once the Republican Party is smashed into pieces, which we hope to be able to do this year, then inexorably the split of the Democrats goes on. And there'll be a Wall Street Democrat party with Schumer and Hillary and others, right? You know the risk, the drill. And then you're going to have this other part, which is going to be initially, it may well be led by people like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Marcy Kaptur, people like that. But those leaders may not be able to hold on, because their entire outlook is so rooted in the Democratic sellouts of the past decades that they're going to have a hard time breaking away. Now, let me just remind you what we're talking about here with the party systems, right? Just so you know. The party system from 1860 to 1896, this has actually come up this week, it's relevant. The Lincoln Republicans from 1860 to 1896, protectionism, internal improvements like the Transcontinental Railroad, a nice protective tariff, and at least initially a controlled currency in the form of the greenbacks. And then this was aborted by the Specie Resumption Act and the Coin Act, the crime of 1873. In other words, it deteriorated, although the question of the protective tariff was kept in place all the way to McKinley in 1896. So that's a party system. In 1896 to 1932, it stops being in any way the Lincoln Republicans. It becomes straight Wall Street, Morgan, Rockefeller, bankers, Republicanism. And that brings us then such figures as Calvin Coolidge, who's a villain, and Herbert Hoover, who's also a villain, although perhaps maybe a little bit less than Calvin Coolidge. And that gets us up to 1932. Now, the great one, the greatest progress we've ever had, and in some ways the most effective form of human social organization ever developed, is the New Deal of 1932 to 1968. And that's the bank account that we're living on today in terms of infrastructure, in terms of education and social progress and so forth. From 1968 to 2008, we had the Republican Southern strategy, right? The dominance of reactionaries, of Nixon, of Reagan, of Bush the Elder, and so forth. And this was by and large a disaster. Lost wars, union busting, social backlash, pessimism, abominable stuff. So now, after 2008 with Obama, we're living in this ragged kind of transition. Notice that the extinction of parties is often closely associated with these transitions. For example, in the 1850s, that was a system where you had the Jacksonian Democrats, right, anti-national, anti-bank, subversives, controlled by the British in many cases. And then you had on the other side the Whigs. And the problem with the Whigs is the Whigs were simply not coherent. The Whigs were anybody who didn't like King Andrew. And that was a lot of people. But they couldn't agree on anything else, despite the best efforts of a heroic figure like Henry Clay. And we should admire Henry Clay. Abraham Lincoln certainly did, right? Abraham Lincoln often said, I couldn't be where I am today without the ideas of Henry Clay. Henry Clay invented the American system, the protective tariff, the internal improvements, and other forms of national progress. A bank, the Bank of the United States, right, for public credit, credit creation for job creation. That would have been a Hamiltonian Bank of the United States, not a central bank in any way. So you have to understand, we are now attempting to complete the transition. The transition in the 1850s, you had to see the Whig Party disappear during the candidacy of Winfield Scott. And ironically, this was over the issue of immigration, that General Scott made overtures to the Irish vote, and the others freaked out, the nativists. And then you had the Know-Nothing Party. Donald Trump is a know-nothing, right? You ask him, hey, Donald, what do you know about the Ku Klux Klan? And he'll say, I don't know anything. I know nothing. I know nothing. It's amazing to see. It's uncanny. He doesn't know it, but he does it. He's reflecting all of these historical facts, which I don't think he's aware of, that his know-nothingism is exactly what you had in the 1850s. Anyway, you also had the Free Soil Party that came along. So out of that relatively chaotic situation, you have the birth of the Republican Party, which for at least, you know, the first years under Lincoln was about the best you could find anywhere in the world. So we are trying to promote historical progress in that way. Now, we got to get a little bit more detailed on how it's going to benefit the world. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. It's the 5th of March. Now, we went through the various party systems. This is also germane to the arguments coming from Trumpians. In particular, this character Jeffrey Lord, I think you see him on CNN with Van Jones, a sort of fake leftist, but who actually had one of his better appearances. In other words, the Ku Klux Klan. Is the Ku Klux Klan leftist? Are we nuts? I've heard Limbaugh in the past say that Hitler was a leftist. Because it says socialist, right? This is the stupidest nominalism. No historian, nobody who's ever opened a book about Nazi Germany would ever say that Hitler was a leftist, right? There were communists and there were social democrats and there were a few others, right? There was even the German Democratic Party of some kind of, you know, center. But Hitler is an extreme right winger. My God. But the point is, when you go way out on the right wing, you don't just get more and more conservative. You kick over into fascism. That's the way to do it. And the way you do it is you go from being a sort of sedate parliamentary right wing oppressor to being a violent terroristic Sturmabteilung with stormtroopers and squadristi and all the rest. So this Jeff Lord, right? So he says the Ku Klux Klan was the arm of the Democratic Party. Sure, because in the 1860 to 1896 and the 1896 to 1932 and all the way into the to the 1968, the Democrats were the bad guys. Right? Up until 1932. Sorry, a little confused. But up until 1932, the Democrats are the bad guys. And in the South, they continue to be the bad guys. And what you see in 1968 is the party's flip, that the Democrats lose whatever superiority they had with somebody like Carter, and the Republicans therefore take over. So You can't say that the Ku Klux Klan is a left-wing organization any more than you can say that Hitler is, but these people will do it. Now, we've gone through the two Republican parties. Now, here's the idea. If the evil forces of the Republican Party are split and played one against the other, how would that help the world political situation? In other words, I say, we're interested in pushing the world political axis significantly to the left through the demise, the extinction of the Republican Party. How would this work itself out? We'd like to move it several degrees. So we're talking about moving left, moving towards civilization, abandoning barbarism and savagery. We want to see social and economic and intellectual progress. We want to see optimism, because remember, right-wing ideology based on despair, as in the case of Trump. We're not winning anymore. We're not winning anymore. Despair. Hitler appealed constantly to despair, right? Trump is our last hope. Well, that was Hitler in 1932. Now, let's just take a look at a couple of things. You know, the apparatus of the color revolutions. Let's look at that. The color revolutions that have so threatened the peace and survival of the world over the last couple of years, right? Above all, that Euromaidan event, but also the Arab Spring, right? These are disasters. These are planned by the U.S. intelligence community. But some of these functions, a lot of them, have been sort of semi-privatized out of the CIA and the DIA and the NSA. And they are put into this thing called the National Endowment for Democracy. And this is the thing that marches to the tune of the Albert Einstein Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Gene Sharp, people like this. The National Endowment for Democracy is what has been running under this guy, Carl Gershman, I think, still. This is what's been running a lot of these coups, color revolutions, Orange Revolution, Roses Revolution, Bulldozer Revolution, on and on, Maidan, just endless series, right? Some fail, some don't. Attempts to overthrow the government in Iran, right? Attempts to overthrow the government of Russia, and so forth. So the NED. Now, that has two wings. That has one that's controlled by the Democrats, and that's typically been under the influence of Madeleine Albright. But then there's the Republican brand, and it's called the International Republican Institute, IRI, the International Republican Institute, and they do a lot of the destabilizations and meddling around the world. This is a very, very big deal. And you will certainly recall in 2012, right, after the U.S.-backed coup against Hosni Mubarak, which was camouflaged by a bunch of young, you know, deluded romantics in Tahrir Square who thought that they were doing the coup. They didn't realize it was a coup by these generals with Samantha Power and Cass Sunstein on the phone with them, and Susan Rice, telling them, carry out the coup, boys. We want Hosni Mubarak out. Well, this is what was done. This stuff was run from the U.S. So in the wake of that overthrow of Mubarak, the Egyptians arrested about 50 people, 50 people from the non-governmental organization, NGO world. And one of them was the son of a distinguished Republican member of the House, Lahoud, Ray Lahoud. And I think Ray Lahoud went on to become Secretary of Transportation for a while, I'm pretty sure. But this was his son, Lahoud Jr., was almost arrested. He actually fled, I think, to the U.S. Embassy, where he took refuge because the Egyptians were going to arrest him. So this is the IRI. And you'll remember with the Euromaidan, right? They're very important, right? This Klitschko, right? The big palooka, the prize fighter who's now the mayor of Kiev. He's part of it. So we have the International Republican Institute. John McCain is the chairman of the board. But you'll find all kinds of people in there. So here's my question. If and when, and I hope soon, the Republican Party splits into Republican Party A, the racists, the bigots, and so forth, and Republican Party B, the Wall Street liberal Republicans, country club Republicans. If that happens, how will those two entities divide up this International Republican Institute, or will they be able to? And this is important because there are a lot of places where they say, well, we don't want any of these meddling people in the Madeleine Albright, Jimmy Carter, Obama human rights tradition. We're sick of them. We're not going to let them in. But then comes somebody, a right winger. You can imagine people are trying to get into Russia saying, oh, yeah, we like Putin. We'd like to, help out with Putin. Unlikely to work, but you get the idea. So you're going to have these two different groups essentially competing for the patronage, for the jobs, the pork barrels, the concessions, right, the pie that's available for these color revolutions. And it's going to be significantly weaker because they won't really have a unified reactionary right-wing cover. So let's also take a look now at some of these details, right? The self-destruction of the Republican Party. Remember, we're rooting for both sides, or neither. Neither, right? Trump comes out and says, Romney, you're a failed candidate. You're a stiff. Right. There you go. Absolutely. But then Romney, and this is, some of this stuff is actually quite shocking, right? Romney, yesterday morning starts off with his philippic, his diatribe against Trump. And he scores a lot of points. We'll try to sum up a couple in a minute. World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. We got our last segment. Let's just savor some of these fights between among the Republicans. Internecine conflict. Intestinal conflict. Intestine conflict, I guess. Romney gets out there. He suggests that Trump is mentally unstable. Score. That he is engaged in adultery and boasted about it. Yes. He's vulgar. Absolutely. He's a phony. He's a fraud. Trump University. Trump Airlines. All the failures. His business career is a graveyard of bankruptcies. The guy's a fraudulent bankrupt. He pushes anger. Anger has dragged countries into the abyss, and he is always looking for scapegoats. Some of this stuff, obviously, he's got Hitler in mind, although, unfortunately, he doesn't say it. What we need, by the way, in the coming week is somebody with the guts to come out and say, fascist, right? At least fascist. Van Jones, get out there and call him a fascist. Romney, call him a fascist. Let's escalate. Come on, the more the merrier. Let's mix it up. Let's stir the pot. Let the chips fall where they may. So Romney gives a speech. Trump comes back at him. You're a failed candidate. You're a loser. You're a stiff. Interesting. Rubio says Romney is Trump is a con artist. Yes, it's true. Trump is invited to distance himself from David Duke, the grand Kleagle, wizard vizier, and he won't do it. Trump could also say, I don't like Mussolini. He doesn't do that either. Now, the really interesting stuff. Mitch McConnell says to the Republican senators, if you don't want to come to the convention, don't come. You might get photographed together with Trump. That would be the kiss of death in many areas. And then he says, look, if you senators want to run attack ads against Trump, so you have a Republican senator running an attack ad against a Republican candidate, then go ahead and do it. This is manna from heaven. Hallelujah. The Republicans can lose the entire Congress thanks to Trump. This is what we're praying for, that he's going to bring down a lot. And that's also one of the things that's fueling the backlash, is you've got those congressmen, right, those entrenched, corrupt Republican congressmen who want to keep their seats, and they figure they got a distance from Trump. This is great. This is the only way it could have been done. Everybody was so defeatist. They said, we'll never get the Congress back to normal without redistricting, and that's going to take decades. Maybe not. Maybe the Congress will go and the Republicans will lose it. By the way, this weekend in Washington, CPAC, Conservative Political Action Congress, right? Really RPAC, Reactionary Political Action Conference. Trump won't go. Trump is boycotting CPAC. So more bad blood, more acrimony, right? He obviously doesn't care about the ideology of Buckley or Austrianism. Trump worships power. So he's a phony. Now let's get the other thing in this debate yesterday, right? In pathology, you'll remember under Hitler, we had the Führerprinzip, that the idea was it was a dictatorship and that everything emanated from the triumph of Hitler's will. So what do we have? Trump is asked in the debate last night, suppose you get to be president. That's very interesting. General Michael Hayden, former CIA director, former NSA director, four-star general in the Pentagon, right? This guy is, you know, the secret government, maybe one of the ways to look at it. There's a letter by 100 foreign policy experts who say they'll never support you, and above all, your use of torture. He says, I want to go beyond waterboarding, and I want to bomb and kill the families of alleged terrorists. So Hayden comes out, and he's talking to Bill Maher, the scurrilous comedian, and he says, I'm going to target the families, and I'm going to use worse than waterboarding. This violates the Geneva Convention. Not even Hitler was able to denounce the Geneva Convention, at least on the Western Front. In the East, he didn't keep that semblance going, right? He was openly committing war crimes against the Soviets. But in the West, not so much. So Hayden came out and said, if Trump gives the military illegal orders, then we will refuse to obey. We will have a military rebellion, in effect, right? Massive insubordination, passive resistance against the fascist Trump. So the question to Trump is, so what would you do as commander-in-chief if the U.S. military refused to carry out those orders? Trump, they won't refuse. They're not going to refuse me. Believe me. Yeah, but those are illegal orders. And then he goes into this stuff about the atrocities of ISIS, blah, blah. Trump, and. I'm a leader. I'm a leader. I've always been a leader. I've never had any problem leading people. If I say do it, they're going to do it. That's what leadership is about. This totally alien to the American system. You're supposed to say, I will endeavor to build a consensus with the Congress and pass this. Now, a little bit later, he gets back to this leader thing again, and this is towards the end. And I'm a leader. I'm a leader. I'm a winner. I'm a winner. So leader, Führer, winner, Siegen. I am by far the leader, says Trump at another point. He talks about leadership. And let's just get to this gem here at the end. He's talking about, he repeats both of them. He says, I will prove to be a great leader, and if I tell them to do it, they're going to do it. Okay? So, I think you get the idea. He says, Trump says, Rubio is not a leader. Trump about himself. I will prove to be a great leader. And you know, it's interesting we talk about the polls. And Trump is the best feeling with ISIS, according to the polls, he says. He also says he likes Putin because Putin is a strong leader. This stuff is extremely dangerous because it just it doesn't fit the U.S. system. And always this mantra, if I tell them to do it, they will do it. That's a dictator, people. That's the man on horseback. That's the strong man. And I'm just amazed to see these libertarians have been prating about the Constitution. They don't care about the Constitution. They worship money and power. They're the principles of mammon, okay? That's all they are. So, what else we have? Ben Sass. There's a prophecy about Ben Sass that he's supposed to be the 45th president of the United States. And it looks like he may be trying to implement that that idea. So look, if you get to the Republican convention and Trump can be stopped on the first ballot, remember you need 1,237 delegate votes to get the nomination. Suppose Trump falls 100 or 150 or 200 votes short. Suppose Rubio does win Florida, not likely. Kasich might win Ohio. Somebody like Romney might come out of the woodwork and try to win New York, New Jersey, California, quite possible. Ben Sass may be out there too. In other words, Romney may find that he's not the only one who can come into the race and try to dump Trump. Of course, all the libertarians are they're all opining and they're making solemn declarations that you better not take that nomination away from the Donald because he really deserves it. Well, sorry. That's the Republican Party. So this is the panorama of Republican destruction, of infighting. And we urge them, hit yourselves again. We urge them on to fight each other, to attack each other, to tear each other down, to expose each other, and to free us once and for all of this monstrous social formation known as the Republican Party. Back next week.